Welcome to Good Things Radio, a lifestyle show about activating your mind, body, and soul to become fully alive. And now, your host, Brooke Taylor.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Good Things Radio. Hello, my name is Brooke Taylor. This is episode number 174. Also, right out of the gate, a big warm hello and thank you to the smiling souls that attended an event called Courageous in Cleveland, Ohio over the last week. I was blessed to be one of the speakers, along with music artist Carrie Ford, Greg Wazinski, Candace Spencer, who I met for the first time. And it was a fancy performing arts center. So it felt good to be gussied up. I had my fancy long floral jacket on, which was mistaken, by the way. My son thought I was going to a sleepover. He thought I was wearing a robe, but it was good. And the theme was courage. So my talk centered around courage calisthenics, how to work our bravery biceps, and four main action steps. So that was focus, adapt, remember past victories. The Holy Spirit helps us remember past victories when we're down, and embrace and evangelize, and walking through how we can live those out and what that looks like. So thank you to every beautiful lady who came out to that event. And we actually, there was one attendee who drove all the way from New York to Cleveland. If you saw my Facebook page, you may have seen that post. Alex is her name. One of these days, I want to get her on the show. Her story is unbelievable. Born in Russia as a survivor of a botched abortion. Her mom took something, tried to abort her. She survived, had some disabilities, went to an orphanage, and was then adopted later by a mom and dad in the United States that were incredible parents. And her life is like a movie. Such an incredible person and woman of faith she is. So thank you to Alex for coming to that event. And talk about courage. I mean, she definitely embodied the theme. And also want to give a shout out to my West Coast friends. I'm going to be in San Francisco. I think it's the San Francisco area, not too far. It's Tracy, California, speaking at the Magnify Conference. It will be Saturday, June 1st. It's being presented by World Ablaze Ministries. And you can get more information at themagnifyconference.com if you're in that area. But it's not often that I get to that neck of the woods. So check it out. I would love to see you. And speaking of California, that's where today's show's going to go. We kind of have one of the Sunshine State's finest on today's program, an interview that I've been excited about for a long time, sitting down with Olympian runner, fastest American half marathoner, Ryan Hall. And this is timely for my life at the moment as I prepare for my first full marathon. It's going to be on May 19th. And so just over the weekend, I actually ran 20 miles, which was the longest run I've ever run in my life. And it was harder than I thought. It wasn't just hard. It was harder than I thought, but I did it. And it's also the longest run that I will do before the race on May 19th, because now the tapering starts. So I'm still learning. But one thing that I keep hearing is that it's one of the most crucial aspects of training. You have to dial it back, take the mileage down until the day of that full marathon. And so it's scary, because I feel like in some ways, like somebody who sailed around the harbor for like the last 20 years, and I'm comfortable with that, and it can be challenging even there. But now I have to say, around the world, and you know you can encounter anything in an experience like that, and it's a whole different ball game. So a lot can happen out there, and yet there's beauty in the glorious unknown too. You know, that's where I end and God begins, without a doubt. So lots of lessons I'm still learning, and could definitely use your prayers. But I'll keep you posted along the way, because it's going to be here before we know it. So May 19th is the big day. And so for all of us, I think today's interview is going to tie right in. Whether, again, you are a runner or not the least bit interested, it still speaks to the greater picture of life and vision and failure and getting back up again, courage and inspiration. In Ryan's new book, it's called Run the Mile You're In, Finding God in Every Step. And Ryan is not only famous for his elite running career, but he also happens to be a very strong, outspoken Christian, which is what I think first caught my attention working in Christian radio. And I remember the interviews in preparation for the Olympics and how bold he would be in his faith. We would take those snippets, play them on the morning show, and root for him as a market, as an audience. And so it's neat now to be able to connect with him. And so I went back in the archives and I found one one of those interviews and wanted to play an excerpt for you now. This is from a live CNN interview back in 2012, preparing for the Olympics, talking about how God is his coach. I love this. Check it out.
Brian, tell us about your coach and why you've got so much faith in him.
Yeah, well, my coach has been around for a long time, and, you know, just to put it straightforward, my coach is God. I call it faith-based coaching because, you know, I supply what I learned in my faith through the Bible and through worship, through other people, and I apply that to my running.
Explain to me how God trains you.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm still in process, and I'm still figuring this thing out myself, and so, you know, I don't have it all figured out yet, but, you know, it's pretty simple. Like, I just get up every morning or whenever I'm praying, you know, God's always around us, always talking to us, and I just ask him questions. And, you know, I think a lot of times people have faith, but they don't really integrate it into their day-to-day living. And for me, I got to the point in the fall of 2010 where I was like, I want to put myself in a position where I'm desperate to hear from God. And so, you know, I felt God calling me to do this faith-based coaching, and that's what I've done. So, you know, I ask God questions like, you know, how far do you want me to run today? And I remember before the Olympic trials, this last trials, I was asking God, you know, how do you want me to prepare this last week? And I felt like he was telling me, you need to rest more than you've ever rested before. And so I did that. And, you know, as a result, was able to qualify for my second one.
Isn't that great? So Ryan talks about that in his book, actually, Run the Mile You're In, and how that worked out and why he came to that. So it's really neat to be brought behind the scenes. But before we get into the interview, I just want to share a production note. So this conversation, on a personal note, is something that I've looked forward to, not just months, but I would say years, you know, admiring Ryan way back when he was in the Olympics and hoping one day that we would be able to connect, whether it would be on the morning show or in some form. So it was pretty exciting to finally be able to book him and have a copy, an advance copy of his new book. And then our interview was probably about 45 minutes, but throughout that segment, our connection was pretty bad. Ryan actually Skyped in from his car because his connection in his house was just not very good. So he left, got on the car, did that. But then the call dropped like three times. And it wasn't until I actually went to edit the file that I realized that entire first portion of our dialogue was not captured. It was cut off. It wasn't even there. So I was pretty heartbroken. And I didn't realize it right away because we had recorded this a few months ago, but it was on embargo until the book release. So by the time I figured all of this out, Ryan is now on tour. And so I can't get him back, at least for right now. And I didn't want to wait any longer to tell you about this book and to bring you at least the conversation that we do have. I think you're going to love what he has to say. And so I still want to share with you the stories, the insight with our abbreviated conversation that I was able to capture. And in some ways, I think it kind of fits right in, actually, because some of the themes in Ryan's book include disappointment. What happens when everything is planned and we're waiting for this moment and we prepare, and then a curveball? How do we overcome, adapt, embrace when things don't turn out how we want? And so that's actually where our conversation is going to pick up. In our interview, Ryan taking us into a race, the New York Marathon, that just kind of broke down, and how finding our why, holding on to meaning when we're kind of in a hurricane, can make all the difference. So that's where we are. It's going to be very abrupt. We're going to jump right into the conversation with Ryan Haw from the book Run the Mile You're In, Finding God in Every Step. One of the marathons, you talk about how the cause you are running for was really the spark that lit your fire to keep you going. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it was back at 2010 New York City Marathon. It was my first time running New York City Marathon, and I was in really good shape. Training had gone phenomenally well. You know, I had high aspirations of trying to win the race. And that was also the first race that I had run for the Hall Steps Foundation, which was the charity my wife and I started as a result of going to Africa and having some insane experiences over there of seeing just how much change can happen as a result of people running a race for a cause. Just a quick thing on that. Like, I was standing next to this guy. We were doing a borehole ribbon cutting ceremony. And he was telling me, he's like, because you guys brought clean water to my community, it means everyone in my community, their life expectancy is going to go up by 10 years. And I was like, how crazy is that? That we can run a race, raise some money, and we're adding years of life onto, this was like a bunch of communities, like of 90,000 people. So think about like all those extra days of life those people are getting to live because we're running a race and fundraising along the way. So it was just super, super powerful. And but that day I was running and I pledged all my prize money. And if you win New York, I believe it's like around $200,000 if you win. So it would have been a nice little, yeah, it would have been a good donation for a small little foundation like ours. And I was really hoping like I could win the thing, you know. I got about halfway into the race. I was actually about mile 15. You go down First Avenue and it's just insane noise, just the crowd's just going crazy. And all the elite guys, they always just like sprint down, especially the African guys. They just get all excited and they sprint down first.
It's really not fair. It just
Yeah. When they get smiling, excited, you gotta watch out. Yeah. So they did that and I went out the back and I was sitting back in like 10th place, but not really in the picture anymore.
Well,
and
what was going on with you here physically? How does that feel? Because I can't imagine. Is your stomach hurting? Is your ankle? Did you have different physical issues going on?
Yeah, I did have a little bit of like a hip thing that popped up early on in the race that I was feeling. So there are the kind of those things, you know, you all of a sudden your calves feel tight or whatever. But in general, it's more of just like a dull pain that's just like increasing and almost more like it's just like holding you back, you know. It's like you just can't imagine like going any faster, like you feel like you're up against a wall and you can't cross it kind of thing. Even more so, like I wasn't in a good rhythm. Like talk a lot about rhythm in running, you know, like you should just feel like your body's like flowing out there, and I didn't feel that way at all. So yeah, I was kind of pouting, you know, but then I started thinking about what am I out here for, like what am I running for? Like, what's at stake here? And I started thinking about those kids that I encountered in Zambia, and I got their images burned in my mind's eye, you know? I was like, I'm doing it for them. And that just helped me, similar to Beijing, just like get outside myself, relax. And then my body just found a nice smooth rhythm. And I went from wanting to drop out of the race at mile 16 to working my way up into fourth position by the end of the race and narrowly missing on the podium. So still brought home a sizable paycheck for steps, but not the 200 grand one I was hoping for. But it was a powerful learning experience for me.
And, yes.
Learning to navigate suffering well.
And to find meaning. I love that. Yeah. And that's what I love about your book, is that it's not necessarily for runners. It's for any person to be able to find all the qualities that you talk about. You talk about comparison. You say strive for personal excellence, basically.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that was, I don't know if it's the hardest lesson I've had to learn over the last 20 plus years, but certainly up there. I was just always very competitive, you know. But when you think about, like, what does it mean to be competitive? It means, like, you want to beat everyone else. And what does that mean? That means, like, you're better than them at whatever discipline you're engaging in, you know? And so it does, like, it comes back to, like, I'm just comparing how good I am based on who I can beat, you know? And over the years, you know, as I read the scriptures and Bible, I was just really inspired. I always mix this story up between John and Peter, but one of them's talking to Jesus and Jesus just told him how he's going to die. The disciple, I think it was it Peter or John?
It was Peter. It's on page 19.
So Jesus is talking to Peter, tells him how he's going to die. And Peter's response is, well, what about him? Like pointing to John, the disciple, John, like wanting to know, like, well, like what's, you know, and then Jesus is like, if I want him to remain till I come back, like, what is that to you? You follow me. And I just loved how he dealt with that little, it's almost like a childish comparison thing, you know?
So, and then kind of to go back to true self, false self, I love that you address comparison because that's such a biggie. And it doesn't matter what age you're at or even how, I think, mature you are in your faith. It's always a temptation, I think, for me as a woman, whether it's as a mom or a wife or a homemaker. And as an athlete for you, even the most secure people can struggle. So you say focus on personal excellence.
Yes, and that's kind of where I landed, but getting there took a long, long time, and I found myself almost laughing at myself as I was writing this chapter of the book, because was like, man, I should not be the one saying this, because I so used to be the complete opposite. Like, if you ask my parents, be like, he's like the most competitive person. And I was as a kid, you know, like always causing problems with my siblings. And my mom's line at basketball games is, she's like, it always ends in a fight every time. So I was always the instigator because I was so competitive, you know.
But I think and those strengths, like, it did work to your advantage, and it could have been, you, it could have created a monster, but instead it's like, right, you formed and shaped that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, it took me a long time to get to the point to where I wasn't comparing my journey to other people's journey. And when I look at scripture, what I really learned was through the story that's in the Gospel of John, where he talks, Jesus is talking to Peter, and he's telling Peter how he's going to die, which is a pretty heavy subject, you know. And then Peter's response to him is, he looks at John's like, well, how's John going to die? And then Jesus says to him, if I want him to remain till then, what is that to you? You follow me. And that just really captured me. It made me realize, like, how Jesus handles comparison. You're focused on the wrong thing when you're focused on someone else and their journey. Like, your sole focus needs to be on Jesus. And one of my favorite quotes is from Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and he says, don't focus on the way in front of you that's too hard for you. Focus on Jesus, who's right in front of you, and say, he leads the way, I will follow. And I feel like we get so, I personally have gotten distracted so many times of, like, comparing myself to other people. And really, like, that's what a lot of sport is. It's like, how fast are you relative to everyone else? What place are you relative to everyone else? When really, like, I don't like that aspect of sports. I don't like it that when the guy wins the silver medal in the Olympics, if he was expected to win the gold, the first question is, are you disappointed? It's like, are you serious? Like, this guy's devoted his life to this, and, like, look how good he is. And yet, like, he probably is, like, bummed out, right, and going to take that super hard. And there's something wrong with that, you know? Like, it can't be about that, because it's a lose-lose. You know, whether you're Michael Phelps and you win 8 gold medals, he still was depressed the summer after that happened, you know? So you got to find a way to make it about not how good you are relative to other people, but just following hard after something and developing your own personal excellence and cultivating your gifts as much as humanly possible.
And that is so, it really is individual, and that's it. We never get bored with that. I mean, the things you're working on now are much different than you were working on 10 years ago. And it's funny because you see pictures of yourself here, fastest American half marathoner, and you're really thin and lean, obviously. So I was surprised when we were Skyped, you're like ripped, and you are a weightlifter now. So it's like you were saying, focusing on personal excellence, and that's a total transition. You like are a big deadlifter now, I guess. Is that true?
Yeah, I do a little bit of everything. It's funny because I used to hate to lift. But then, you know, after requiring so much from my body for 20 years, running 100-mile weeks for 20 years on end, it's not a super sustainable, healthy lifestyle. So I had to figure out a way to get back to my body and also just to push myself every day. So, and it was fun just to see progress, you know. But even with that, like going back to comparison, like, just the other day, like, I'm on Instagram or something, I see, like, some girl, like, deadlifting way more than I'm deadlifting, and I'm like, I feel like I'm getting better at this, and I'm still not that good. But it's not about that, you know, it's about me, like, continuing to go hard in the weight room and try and hit my own personal goals, which I have, and, you know, like, I'm never gonna be a world-class lifter, like, it's not in the genetics, but I can still, like, get strong for me. And that's satisfying for me when I'm focused on that.
That's such a good reminder, because in the end, I mean, yes, the gifts that you have in running, I'll never have. I wish I did. But those qualities that helped you get there, we can all cultivate and work on. And for me, you know, as a mom of 5 and a runner for 20 years, it's like you said, that personal excellence and pushing myself and learning how to suffer and use that and the resilience, and then transitioning that into parenthood, because I know that's a new chapter for you. You're now a dad of 4 girls, you and your wife, Sarah. So that's kind of one of the final chapters is about love. Can you take us into that? And that story alone should be a book, but just what that's taught you and where you are now.
Yeah. I'm so grateful to have had the opportunity to run, more than anything because of the people that I encountered on my journey, you know. And I feel like it was easy for me at times to get sidetracked by like the destination, trying to get to the mountaintop, so to say, and miss like all the people I was traveling the road with, you know. And so in that chapter, I talk about meeting Sarah and our relationship and how that evolved and grew, and then how that turned into, yeah, adopting four older children, which has just been an amazing ride, amazing new chapter, you know. Like when we're trying to decide, like, are we capable of adopting four, because they're all sisters and they're all older at the time we adopted them. I believe at the time we adopted them, they were like 5, 7, 12 and 15. So, you know, going from zero, not knowing what you're doing really, to the full spectrum of kids was
including
a little bit
teenagers.
Haunting. Yeah. It's kind of like standing on the starting line of a marathon and being like, I don't know if I'm ready to do this or not. But there's like, you can either believe like the thoughts in your mind that are like, you're not ready, you're not adequate, you like, this is too hard for you, or which are all like rooted in fear, right? Or I could listen to the voice of love in me that's saying, God's filled your heart with love for these kids. Like, focus on that and choose them because of love. Don't reject them because of fear. So it was a leap of faith, but it's just our kids are so amazing and have just added so much joy to our life. You know, our home is full of energy, dancing and laughing and crying occasionally. Usually I cause the crying.
But that's the thing, like with the boldness. I think when you learn to be a fool for Christ, you know that you have nothing to fear. And the more you step out, because I feel the same way about our journey. When you are stretched in ways you never imagined, you realize, I really don't have any, what do I have to lose? If God is calling me to this, he'll equip me.
Yeah.
So I think that that's a beautiful example as well. I wanted to ask one more question about negative thoughts, because you just touched on it when you talked about don't listen to fear. That is something for all of us. It's the negativity that creeps in where we might be comparing or recognizing our physical limitations because we are feeling older or we don't have as much energy. Or for me, it's the food. I will have such a great day and in a moment, excuse my language of like PMS purgatory, where I'm like, I will eat like an entire bag of M&Ms and just throw out like a whole 12 hours of doing really, really well.
Yeah.
And I cannot master that. And then I'm like, forget it. You know, I'm the worst. And that's the reality of what I'm telling myself. So how do you defeat the negativity? Because this is, I mean, that is such a huge component.
Yeah. You got to get just really good at declaring things over yourself, or at least that's what works for me. Oftentimes when I'm out running and having those negative thoughts, because like every single marathon, you have those thoughts, you know. I remember my best marathon, 6 miles into the London Marathon, my calves were just super tight. And I remember having this thought, I was like, I'm not going to make it. Like my calves are just rock tight and I have 20 miles to go. And so you have to learn to deal with those negative thoughts. And that's where I love to take those thoughts and use them as like triggers. So like whatever I'm telling myself, I'll just flip it around and declare the opposite. You know, it's kind of like Jesus in the wilderness when the devil is trying to sell him lies, he was speaking truth to his lies, you know? So like almost seeing them as like a good thing in the sense that they're going to trigger you to declare to what you really need to hear in that moment, you know. But it takes a lot of intentionality. Like it's easy for me to talk about it, but I had moments yesterday when I could have used the same exact advice, you know. So I'm very much still on the same road as all you guys, and I have my moments where it's interesting to me, like I can have such self-control in some areas of life. And then other areas, it doesn't spill over, you know. So I'm still trying to figure this stuff out myself.
I think you just hit the nail on the head, because I can get up at 4:30 and run 6 miles before I get my kids up, but I can't withstand the chocolate bar in the cupboard. And it one does kind of, so I do think, because is the diet thing easy for you? It seems like it must be, or is that a challenge?
It was a challenge for me when I was running. And I think I wrote about this in the book about like just losing self-control after marathons and putting on a whole bunch of weight, going on like donut eating competitions, essentially, you know, and like, but it wasn't healthy. Like emotionally, it was,
right.
it would like ruin me, you know, for that 2 weeks. Like I'd feel so terrible about myself. That was a struggle. And I think a lot of that struggle was coming from not giving myself enough, not taking good I was taking good care of myself. It's just, it's this weird line as a pro marathoner where you got to be light and lean. Like that's just part of the sport, you know? So I was always kind of on that line and always hungry, you know, always thinking right. about food. And so it did kind of, you know, when I'd lose self-control, I'd lose it on food. So I can like fully relate to like what you're saying.
And I think what's hard about that is those, and I talk to a lot of women and friends and girlfriends that those that struggle with the food, the eating, it's a lifetime, you know, and you mm-hmm. might be doing good for a month or a week mm-hmm. and then you fall. But I also think it's the same thing with anything that we deal with. This is not heaven. So for the rest of our life, there's right. going to be imperfections and crosses that right. we have to carry. And that's why the resilience and the perseverance is so important, because it is a marathon.
Yeah. Yeah. And oftentimes I know for myself, I think it's like a one-time breakthrough, you know, it's like, oh, I like beat this and that's a one-time breakthrough, but it's like a daily decision and multiple times a day sometimes, you know. It's not at least in my case, it's rarely a one-time deal. It's a commitment that lasts, you know, your entire life.
As we wrap up, I just want to do a lightning round. So I'm going to mention like a few fast things about you, some facts, and then your response, just blurt out like the first answer that comes to your mind when I say
okay.
The word or the description, okay?
Okay.
All right, here we go. I asked my husband to check these. I said, are these really lame? He said, no, they're good. So hopefully it'll be okay. Okay, so one word answer, the World Marathon Challenge. And for our listeners that may not know, you ran a marathon distance in Antarctica, Africa, Australia, Asia, Europe, South America, North America within 7 days. One word about that.
Donuts.
Donuts.
Do I get to explain these words or no?
We'll leave a PS at the end. Okay. Well, and the next one was dessert and sweet. So that actually ties in. We'll just say donuts.
Cinnamon rolls. Cinnabon.
Cinnamon rolls. You like the carbs. Best song.
That's a good one. It's always changing. I should have an answer for this, though. I can't remember the title of the song, but it's from Bethel Music. They just came out with a new album. It's called Promises, I think is the name of the song.
Okay.
Yeah, it's amazing. Huh?
So it has promises in it. So we'll just look up
yes.
the lyrics. And...
Yeah, it's okay. Promises.
But it's a worship song, right? Basically.
Yes, yes,
so
yes.
I was going to ask your favorite group or band, but would it be Bethel or would it be different?
It's a toss up between House Fires and Bethel. Have you heard House Fires before?
No.
Oh, I listened to them the entire World Marathon Challenge, every marathon. That's all I listened to. You got to check them out.
Are they Christian?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm writing it down right now.
We're good.
So is it like hard music though, the tempo, or is
no.
it worship?
Okay. No, it's like similar feel to like Bethel.
Okay. Yeah. House Fires.
Yes.
Okay. All right. The best place to run?
St. Moritz, Switzerland.
Oh, man. Okay. Best weightlifting exercise, your favorite?
I'm gonna be really cliche here and say bench press.
Okay. Because that's just cool.
it's what everyone likes, but everyone likes it for a reason. So I don't know.
Okay.
It just feels good.
All right. What about best movie?
Well, the first thing that popped in my head was Last of the Mohicans, but I don't think
yeah. You know what? I tried to watch it with the kids, and it was like, they're like, oh, this is old. Like, it isn't in HD, but the story is good.
Yeah, it is a good story.
Well, I thought you were going to say, like, a running one. Like,
Chariots of Fire used to be... I like Passion of the Christ a lot. I mean, it's kind of an intense movie, but that's the one I used to watch, like, before marathons, and I talk about that in the book.
Yeah,
get his image in my mind.
And then most inspiring person. I know, okay, we'll say that the apex, it's going to be Jesus Christ, but lower down the line, and number two, most inspiring person.
Well, right next to Jesus is my wife, Sarah, right?
Aw, that is an awesome answer. And why does she inspire you?
I've never met someone with so much like tenaciousness for life. Like she just like squeezes everything out of life. And it's kind of crazy sometimes, you know, and sometimes I feel like I'm just like, ah, we're moving really fast in a million different directions, but she just like milks life for everything it's worth. So I'm grateful to have her as a wife to follow along and do that same thing with.
And you're coaching her, right? Is that in writing, yeah. I understand?
Yeah, I tell people I coach her when we're not fighting.
Well, you said she's tenacious, so it sounds like you guys both have a really awesome, strong personality. That was the last question, so I'm going to go back to the PS about the donuts. What was the deal there for the World Marathon?
Well, see, people thought they were signing up for a running challenge, but for me, like, it was a food eating competition.
Because legitimately, you have to eat a lot of calories, right? If you're going to do a competition like that.
Yeah, it's 183 miles in a week. So, and my goal was to not lose any weight, which I didn't do. I still, like, came back, I think, like, 6 or 8 pounds lighter than when I went there, you know? But I was just eating, like, the entire time. Like, just junk too. Like, I don't usually, I eat sugar right after I work out because it's like good in theory to eat sugar then, or at least that's what I tell myself. It goes back into your muscles quicker, you know? So during those marathons, it was like donuts, cookies, like every single picture of me running almost has me like carrying some type of food and like shoving it into my mouth.
Man, that sounds like a dream.
You could do the World Marathon Challenge.
I'm going to tell my coach this because I have a really hard time when I'm running, especially long distances. I don't eat or drink. I preload all the day before. So my coach was like, for the half marathon, you might be able to pull it off, but you cannot do that for a full marathon. We have to figure out fuel. So she's like, I want you to maybe try a baked potato. And I'm like, what? I'm picturing myself carrying a baked potato on my run. And she sent me, so donut sounds way better, but the potato, yeah. I understand the science behind it. Cause she said for ultra runners, the potato trick is like a big thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something that's a little different from like marathon to ultra, you know?
Yeah.
Like when we're running marathons, we're just drinking our calories. So I was taking like Cytomax and drinking that every 3 miles, and that has about 100 calories per serving in it. So if you do have stomach problems, I would recommend fluids. Fluid calories is probably going to be the easiest. Even just like honey and water, people's stomach can handle that fairly well.
Even like I have a doctor friend of mine, and she said don't even do like the goo or the Gatorade, because she said that if you have GI issues, and she said maybe take Imodium before, you know. So, and that's a thing too, and it's the mental thing, because I'm afraid.
I was always afraid too on the starting line. Like, that's normal to be afraid of having to go to the bathroom. I was in the same boat. It's like, I hope I don't have to stop, and I never did.
Okay.
So you should be fine. If a lot of it has to do with caffeine too. Well, so we would drink it like strategically before hard workouts and races. And part of the reason is like it helps clear you out, you know?
Okay.
Especially so if you don't drink it very often, you're really sensitive to it. So we'd always have it like 90 minutes prior to our marathons, and just kind of flushes everything out.
Okay, I'm taking your word for that. I'm going to try it. As we close, what is next for you? Are you just going to be focusing on your family, coaching? Would you ever do like an ultra marathon? Because you've done so much with the marathon distance and all the achievements that you could possibly get. Or are you truly done with that side of your life?
Well, only God knows for sure. But I definitely don't have any desire to do ultra stuff. I thought I would, but just with how things ended with my body just being like, no mas, like, we've given you everything we can. It was really clear that like running was not going to be, you know, going longer was not going to be good for my body. So I don't see myself getting back into the running side of things, but always staying involved in the sport through coaching, through Sarah. And I do go out every once in a while with like my kids or with Sarah and jog around a little bit, but it's getting more and more seldom. So I don't know.
What about your girls? Do they run?
So my oldest daughter, Hana, she runs. Yeah, she's 18. She's a junior in high school because she'd never been to school before. So we put her back as far as we could. She didn't even know English. None of the kids knew English when they came over. Oh. So you can imagine they're way, way behind in school. So she got the running bug, and it was really cool to see, because when we adopted everyone, you know, they had been in an orphanage for 3 years, weren't physically active at all. So they weren't like your typical Ethiopian who's like out in the farm and like actually physically in really good shape from like the farming and walking and all that. She weighed more than I did. And I was, you know, 140 pounds at 5'10". She just was consistent with her training, you know, and just got better and better every day and just worked really hard. And now she was a state champ last year in Arizona for cross country, ran like 17:10, I believe, for 5K.
Wow.
And just getting letters from colleges and stuff. So it's cool. Like for me, like just to see like her transformation and that's possible for kids, you know, no matter where you're at. If you're overweight, and a lot of people get into running because they're overweight and they're trying to lose a little bit. And then they find out, hey, I'm actually like good at this and talented at this, and then end up going to the Olympics. Like there's been stories like that before. So kind of no matter where you're at, you know, no matter what age, just consistency is the name of the game, you know, getting yourself out the door 6 days a week. I think that's ideal.
And taking a chance and, you know, thinking about your yes to those girls and where they are now. I mean, it really, every time you look at them, it has to be a miracle. I feel that way about my daughter. Like, what if we wouldn't have said yes?
Yeah.
What if we would have been afraid? And I'm just so glad that you're all being blessed and it's a benefit.
Yeah. And we just need lots of people to say yes, you know?
Yeah.
That's why we named like the Hall Steps Foundation, the Steps Foundation. Cause like me, like my wife and I adopting 4 kids, that's a nice step, but that's a very small step in the big scheme of things when there's millions of orphan kids in Ethiopia alone, you know?
Yep.
But if everyone steps up and takes that step, that's when we see big change happen.
Well, how can we find out more about your foundation and get a copy of your book?
Yeah. So you can find my book on Amazon and then also Barnes & Noble. Our foundation is the HallStepsFoundation.org. So you can go on there, and what people do is they can sign up for whatever race they want to do and fundraise, like set up a fundraising page right on there, and we'll send them a uniform and they're off and running. And all that money goes to the projects that we're involved with. We're doing a lot in Ethiopia right now with orphanages. So we don't have, it's just Sarah and I running it. So there's no, you know, every dollar goes to our project.
That's really good. So you have ownership over where it's going, where the need is, and where that's being applied.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for your book and thank you for all you do. And please keep in touch. We're going to be watching for you. And I'm going to start bench pressing just because you said that. Thanks,
Ryan. So fun.
Hey, are you in the area? Brooke would love to connect with you at one of her upcoming talks. On May 11th at St. John Vianney Parish in Mentor, Ohio. On May 31st at the Magnify Women's Conference in Tracy, California. Or on June 28th at Immaculate Conception Church in Dublin, Georgia. For more information on these events or to book Brooke for your church, retreat, or event, visit brooketaylor.us. That's brooketaylor.us.
Thank you again to my guest, Ryan Hall. I really think this is a good book for teenagers as well. He opens up the first part of the book, the first few chapters, with a story about his dad and their relationship. And he goes on to talk about how they would set goals. They would pour concrete in the backyard and actually, writing in the cement, sketch down what their dream was, their goal that year, and that's in the vision chapter. But the faith, the substance behind the book is really beautiful. I encourage you to check it out. It's Run the Mile You're In, Finding God in Every Step. And the book is linked up in our show notes as well. Also, a neat postscript after our conversation, and it's been announced now, but when Ryan and I spoke, he was talking about his excitement to travel with his wife, Sarah, and go on pilgrimage to the Holy Land for the first time. So next year, in 2020, he'll be running the Jerusalem Marathon for the first time. And while I won't be there at that race, I am excited to share with you that we are going back too. I can't imagine any other place in the world that I would rather go on pilgrimage. So it's just now being firmed up. We're getting ready to roll out the details, but I wanted to tell you in case you're feeling called, that you're feeling tugged for Lent of 2020 to go to the Holy Land. Brother John Michael Paul, teaming up with him again, as well as our tour guide, Jareer. A few episodes ago, I brought you an interview with him and his heart. You can just see what an amazing man he is. So more details to come on that. It's really a poppin' season right now. We've got my son graduating, preparing for the first marathon. This trip is coming together. And I have a feeling I'm going to be shedding a lot of tears in the process, especially with the graduation. I can hardly believe it. We'll touch on that a little bit more in our next episode. So coming up on Good Things Radio episode number 175 next week, a conversation with Chantal Howard. She and her husband, theologian Peter Howard, are the founders of the ministry Heroic Families. Chantal is a wife, she's a mom, she's a Catholic speaker, and really great insights when it comes to fostering a family strong in the faith and how we may live out our vocation in small ways every day. Cannot wait to bring you that full conversation with Chantal next week. And a big thank you to my producer, Mark Cumming from Cumming Home Studio, for his dynamic skills and quick work. Mark is a producer extraordinaire, so for any audio or video needs you may have, check him out at cumminghomestudio.com. God bless you, friends. Until next time, peace and love.
Good Things Radio is a production of St. Gabriel Media. Adventure, encounter, evangelize. To find out more, or to schedule Brooke to speak to your group or parish, visit brooketaylor.us. That's brooketaylor.us. Good Things Radio is a production of Cumming Home Studios, produced by Mark Cumming. Find out more at www.cumminghomestudio.com.